The next morning, Jim and Louisa, with Buckhut, rode out before dawn, taking their breakfast with them tied in the canteens behind their saddles. Only an hour ahead of the wagons, they stopped to water the horses and eat their breakfast beside a small stream that meandered down from the line of lightly forested hills that lay across their path. They sat opposite each other on fallen logs. They were shy and subdued, unable to meet each other's eyes. The memory of the moment from the previous day was still vivid in their minds, and their conversation was stilted and overly polite. After they had eaten, Louisa took the canteens down to the stream to wash them, while Jim resaddled the horses. When she came back, he hesitated before helping her to step up into Trueheart's saddle. She thanked him more profusely than the small act called for. They rode up the hill, Buckhut leading the way on Frost. As he reached the crest, he wheeled Frost back off the skyline and raced towards them, his face contorted with some strong emotion, his voice reduced to an unintelligible squeak. "What is it?" Jim shouted at him. "What have you seen?" He seized Buckhut's arm and almost yanked him out of the saddle. Buckhut found his voice at last. "Glovu!" he cried, as though in pain. "Many, many!" Jim threw his reins to Buckhut, jerked the small bore rifle from its sheath, and sprang out of the saddle. He knew better than to show himself on the skyline and stopped below the crest to gather himself. Excitement had clamped down on his chest, and he could hardly breathe. His heart seemed on the point of leaping out of his mouth, yet he still had the good sense to check the direction of the breeze. He picked a few blades of dry grass, shredded them between his fingers, and studied the drift of the tiny fragments. It was favourable. Suddenly he felt Louisa's presence close beside him. "What is it, Jim?" She had not understood the word Buckhut had used. "Elephant!" Jim could barely enunciate the magical word. She stared at him for only a moment, then her eyes flared like sunlight in blue sapphire. "Oh, Jim, show me!" Even in the turmoil that had overwhelmed him, he was grateful she was there to share something he knew deep in his heart would stay with him all his days. "Come," he said, and quite naturally she took his hand. Despite all that had gone between them, this trusting gesture came as no surprise to him. Hand in hand, they went to the crest of the hill and looked over. Below them lay a vast bowl of land hemmed about with hills. It was carpeted with new growth, freshly sprung after the recent rains on ground that had been burned by grass fires during the dry season. It was green as an English meadow and scattered with clumps of tall mahuba-huba trees and copses of thornbush. Spread out in the bottom of the bowl, alone or in small herds, were hundreds of elephant. For Jim, who had imagined this first encounter so many times and in so many ways, the reality far outweighed all his fantasy. "Oh, sweet Mary," he whispered. "Oh, God, oh, beloved God." She felt his hand shaking in hers and tightened her grip. She recognised this as a seminal moment in his life, and suddenly she was proud to be beside him, to share it with him. It seemed that this was her place, as though she had at last found where she belonged. He could see at once from their relative size that most of the elephant herds consisted of females and their young. They formed grey agglomerations like reefs of granite, and the shapes of the herds changed only slowly, coming together, then flowing apart again. In all this mass of animals, the great bulls stood apart and aloof, massive dark shapes, even at this remove, dominating the herds that surrounded them, unmistakable in their majesty. Close below where Jim and Louisa stood, one particular animal made all the others seem insignificant. Perhaps it was merely the way the sunlight played upon him, but he was darker than any other. His ears were spread like the mainsail of a ship. He fanned them with a lazy flapping motion. With each movement, the sun caught the curve of a huge tusk and shot a ray towards them like the reflection of a mirror. Once the bull reached down with his trunk and gathered up the dust at his feet and threw it back over his head and shoulders in a pale cloud. "He is so big," Louisa whispered. "I never expected him to be that size." Her voice roused Jim from his trance of wonder, and he looked back to see Buckhut hovering close behind him. "I have only the small bore gun with me." Jim had left the two big German 4-to-the-pounders with the wagons. They were awkward weapons to carry and handle, and having been so often disappointed, he had not expected to run into Elephant today, and certainly not in such numbers. He regretted the oversight now, but he knew it would be folly to use the little London rifle he had with him against a creature endowed with such bulk of muscle and sinew, such massive bone structure. Only with great luck could he hope to send such a light ball into its vitals. "Ride back, Bucket, as fast as Frost will carry you, and bring the two big guns to me with the powder flask and shot belt." No sooner had Jim finished speaking than Buckart was up on Frost and going back down the hill at a mad gallop. They did not watch him go, but Jim and Louisa crept forward using a small bush to break up their silhouette as they crossed the skyline. On the far slope they found a clump of thorny acacia that offered concealment and settled among the fluffy branches and yellow blossom, sitting side by side while Jim focused his telescope on the great bull below them. He gasped aloud, amazed at the animal's enhanced size when seen through the lens, and he stared in awe at the length and thickness of those shafts of ivory. Although he had not yet had his fill of such a magnificent sight, he passed the glass to Louisa. By now she had learned to use it with expertise, and she trained it on the great animal. But after only a few minutes her attention was diverted to the playful antics of a group of calves further on. They were squealing and chasing each other through the forest. When Jim saw the direction of the telescope wandering away from the patriarch, he was strongly inclined to take it out of Louisa's hands and continue his study of the bull. Then he saw the tender smile on her face as she watched the calves at play, and he restrained himself. This in itself was a mark of his feelings for her. He was almost consumed by the hunter's passion, and his heart beat hotly for the chase. Then, to his delight, the bull left the shade of the Mahuba Huba tree and started ambling up the slope directly towards where they sat. He placed his hand on Louisa's shoulder to warn her. When she lowered the telescope, he put a finger to his lips and pointed at the approaching bull. Louisa's expression changed to awe as it drew closer and loomed larger. Even in broad daylight there was something ghostly and unnerving about the utter silence of its walk. It placed its feet with a precision and grace disproportionate to its size, and the huge, spongy pads absorbed all sound. The trunk hung slackly, almost to the ground, and only the tip unrolled and touched the earth, picking up a leaf or a seed pod with an extraordinary dexterity that matched human fingers, toying with it, then tossing it aside. Closer still they could see clearly that its one visible eye was set in a web of deep grey wrinkles, like the concentric rings of a spider's web. A wet stain of tears ran from one corner down its weathered cheek, but the eye gleamed with a sheen of intelligence and sagacity. With every few slow strides the tip of one of those long tusks touched the ground and left a tiny furrow in the earth. Closer it came, until it seemed to fill the sky above them, and they held their breath, expecting to be trodden on, or at least stabbed through, by a thrust from one of those gleaming ivory shafts. Louisa stirred, ready to spring up and run, but Jim tightened his grip on her shoulder and restrained her. The bull was making a deep rumble in his throat and belly, which sounded like distant thunder. Louisa trembled in sympathy, excitement mingling with dread. Slowly, so as not to alarm the animal, Jim raised the little rifle to his shoulder and looked over the sights at the great grey head. Beside him he felt Louisa stiffen in anticipation of the shot. Then he remembered all that his father had told him, where to aim for a shot to the brain. "But only a fool and a braggart tries that shot," Tom had told him. "'Tis such a tiny mark to hit in the huge bony castle of the skull. The true hunter makes certain of the kill. He uses a heavy ball that throws a weighty ball, and he shoots for the shoulder, for the heart and the lungs." Jim lowered the rifle, and beside him Louisa relaxed. The elephant passed their hiding place with its stately stride, and 50 paces further on it reached a small gwari tree, began to strip its purple berries and lift them fastidiously to its mouth. When the withered, baggy rump was turned towards them, Jim rose cautiously and led Louisa back over the ridge. He picked out the feather of dust coming towards them from the direction of the wagons and the pale shape of Frost at full gallop. As Buckhut came up, Jim said, "That was quick work and well done." He snatched one of the great guns from his hand before Buckhut had a chance to dismount. Quickly he examined the weapon. It was unloaded and thick with grease, but the flint was new and well-shaped. Quickly he set about loading. He rammed the huge, glistening ball down the barrel. At 4 ounces it was almost twice the size of a ripe grape. It had been rendered adamantine by the addition of pewter to the molten lead. When it was seated firmly on the wad and the heavy charge of black powder, he looked to the priming, then exchanged the weapon for the second of the pair Buckhut held out to him. When both were loaded, he said, "There's a magnificent bull feeding close by, just over yonder ridge. I'll attack him on foot, but as soon as you hear my shot, bring up drum fire and the second gun with all speed." "What must I do?" Louisa asked, and he hesitated. His instinct was to send her back to the wagons, but he knew that would be unfair. She should not be deprived of the excitement and adventure of this first chase after the mighty beasts. More importantly, she would probably refuse to obey him, and he did not have time now for an argument he would almost certainly lose. On the other hand, he could not leave her here. He knew from vivid accounts that his father had given him that once the first shot was fired, the bush would be swarming with panic-stricken beasts running in all directions. If one came upon her when she was unprotected, she would be in mortal danger. "Follow us, but not too closely. You must keep me or Buckhut in sight at all times, but you must also keep a watchful eye all around you. Elephant may come from any direction, even from behind. But you can rely on Trueheart to carry you out of danger." He drew back the hammer of the big gun to half-cock, ran to the crest of the ridge and peered over. Nothing had changed in the time since he had last seen the bull. He was still feeding quietly on the quarry tree, facing away from Jib. The herds below were resting or feeding quietly, and the young calves were still frolicking around the legs of their dams. Jim paused only to check the direction of the breeze once more. He felt its cool, light touch on his sweaty face, but he took a few moments to dribble a handful of dust through his fingers. The breeze was still steady and in his favour. He knew that there was little reason for concealment now. The eyesight of the elephant is poor, and they are unable to distinguish the form of a man at 50 paces as long as he remains motionless. On the other hand, their sense of smell is phenomenal. With the breeze in his favour, and stepping lightly, Jim crept up behind the feeding bull. His father's words came back to him. "Close! Always get as close as you can. Every yard you close with the quarry makes the kill more certain. 30 paces is too far. 20 is not as good as 10. 5 paces is perfect. From that range, your ball will drive to the heart." As he drew in closer, Jim's step slowed. It was as though his legs were filling with molten lead. His breath became laboured, and he felt as though he was suffocating. The gun in his hands was becoming heavier. He had not expected to be afraid. "I've never been scared before," he thought. "And then, well, perhaps just a little, sometimes." Closer and still closer. Then he remembered he'd forgotten to fully cock the hammer of the big gun. He was so close that the bull would hear the click of the mechanism and take fright. He hesitated, and the animal moved. With that ponderous, deliberate stride, it began to circle the quarry tree. Jim's heart jumped against his ribs as its flank was exposed to him, and he could make out the outline of the massive shoulder blade beneath the riven, creased hide. It was just as his father had drawn it for him. He knew exactly where to aim. He lifted the butt to his shoulder, but the bull kept moving round the tree until its shoulder was covered by the twisted branches and thick, shiny green foliage. It stopped on the far side of the bush from him and began to feed again. It was so close that Jim could see the individual bristles in its ear and the thick, matted eyelashes surrounding the knowing little eye that seemed so incongruous in the ancient, mountainous head. "Only a fool and a braggart shoots for the brain," his father had warned him. But the shoulder was covered, and he was so close. Surely he could not miss from this range. First, he had to fully cock the rifle. He placed his hand over the action, trying to muffle it, and he inched back the engraved steel hammer. He felt the moment when the seer was about to engage, and bit his tongue as he concentrated on easing it through that last fraction of the arc. He was watching the bull, trying by the force of his will to lull it to the sound of metal on metal. The elephant was chewing with evident satisfaction, stuffing the ripe berries into its mouth. The inside of its lips was stained purple. Click! To Jim, the sound was deafening in the great silence of the wilderness. The elephant stopped chewing and froze in monumental stillness. It had heard that alien sound, and Jim knew that it was poised on the edge of flight. Jim stared hard at the dark slit of the earhole and slowly lifted the butt to his shoulder. The iron sights did not impinge upon his vision. He seemed to look through them. All his being was concentrated on that spot, half a finger's length in front of the ear. He knew the pull and feel of the trigger intimately, but so intense was his concentration that the thunder of the shot surprised him. The butt of the weapon pounded into his shoulder, driving him back 2 paces before he regained his balance. The long, bluish plume of powder smoke gushed out from the muzzle and seemed to stroke the wrinkled grey skin of the bull's temple. Jim was unsighted by the recoil and by the cloud of smoke, so he did not see the strike of the bull. But he heard it crack against the skull like an axe blade against the trunk of an ironwood tree. The bull threw back its great head and dropped with almost miraculous suddenness, hitting the earth with such force that he raised a cloud of dust. The ground under Jim's feet seemed to jump with the impact. Jim regained his balance and gaped with astonishment at what he had achieved. Then his heart soared and he whooped with triumph. "He's down! With a single shot I've slain him!" He started forward to gloat over his kill. But there came the pounding of hoofs from behind. When he glanced around, Buckhut was galloping up on Frost, waving the second gun and leading Drumfire. "Change guns, Somoya!" he shouted. "Behold, there are Dluvu all about us. We may kill 10 more if we ride hard." "I must see the bull I've killed," Jim protested. "I must cut off his tail." This was the trophy his father had always taken from a downed beast, even in the heat of the chase. "If he is dead, he will stay dead," Buckhut reined in, snatched the empty gun from his hand and thrust the loaded one towards him. "The others will be gone before you have a chance to cut off the tail. Once they are gone, you will never see them again." Still, Jim hesitated, looking longingly to where the fallen bull lay concealed behind the huari tree. "Come, Somoya, see the dust they raise as they run. Soon it will be too late." Jim looked down the slope and saw that his shot had startled the herds, and in the basin below them the elephant was scattering and fleeing in every direction. His father had told him of the peculiar instinctive horror that the elephant entertains towards man. Even if they have never before encountered his cruel warlike behaviour, they will run 100 leagues from their first contact with him. Still, he hesitated, and Buckhut told him urgently, "Somoya, the moment passes." He pointed at 2 more great bulls charging past, less than a pistol shot from where they stood. Their ears were folded back against their shoulders, and they were at full run. "They will be gone before you can draw 3 more breaths. Follow, follow with all speed." The bulls were already disappearing into the forest, but Jim knew he could catch up within 1 mile of hard riding. He hesitated no longer. With the loaded rifle in hand, he leapt into Drumfire's saddle and booted him in the ribs. "Ha! Ha! Drumfire! After them, my darling!" He turned the stallion's head down the slope and they tore off in pursuit. Drumfire caught the contagious excitement of his rider, and his eyes rolled wildly as he drove his head into each stride like a sledgehammer. They swung in behind the running bulls, closing swiftly. Jim slitted his eyes against the dust storm they were throwing up, with the huge pads of their feet and the thorn branches that whipped back into his face. He picked out the larger of the 2 bulls. Even from his station dead astern, he could see the wide curves of its tusks showing on each side of its heaving flanks. "I will sup with the devil if he's not bigger than the first one I downed," he exulted, and steered Drumfire out to one side, trying to come level with the bull, seeking to open his flank for a shot at the shoulder. He held the rifle across the pommel of his saddle and eased the hammer back into the half-cock position. Then from behind him he heard the wild trumpeting of an enraged elephant, followed almost immediately by Louisa's scream. The two dreadful sounds were almost drowned by distance and the thunder of Drumfire's hoofs. But there was a timbre to Louisa's cry that raked every nerve in his body and cut him to the heart. It was the wild, ringing screech of abject terror. He swiveled in the saddle and looked back and saw her mortal predicament.